Hey, it's Jack. Make sure you check out All Things Transformers. I listen when I'm riding around Jasper with RC.
This is Optimus Prime, and you're listening to All Things Transformers.
If you're gonna ride, Dano, ride in style.
Hello and welcome to an all-new generation of All Things Transformers as we get the origins of any and all Transformers fans that we can. I am, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me, as always, Steve Megatron. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
That's good. That's good.
This is getting expensive.
Today's guest is a GCRN veteran who has 27, now 28 podcasts under his chassis since 2009. As you can hear him laughing, I'll introduce him in a moment once I'm finished with this. He was one of the founding members of ToyCast and a very good friend of ours. It's the goddamn Protoman!
Yo, baby, yo, $2 ho. What's up? How you doing, guys?
That's right. He's that hot rodden teenager, not from Dimension X, but from Cybertron. And, it is time to transform and transcend here on All Things Transformers. Steve, take it away.
So, did you grow up with Transformers, and at what age do you remember first noticing the franchise?
So, my first touch with the brand was, I was 3 years old, and I had a next-door neighbor that was 2 years older than me that it was, you know, kind of like my best buddy, like one of your first best friends that you have. And I did everything he did. He was the older kid, right? And him and his mom were going to be go seeing a movie in our local theater. And we had like that one theater that we would all go to. And it was going to be a movie. Could have been any movie. And I was going to go see it regardless of what it was. What was that movie? This movie called Transformers, the movie. Had no idea what I was getting myself into. It was my next door neighbor, Victor. He was going to go see a giant robot toy movie. Sure, why not? What's the worst it could be? Go to see that movie. Fell in love with it. Sensory overload is probably the best way to describe it. Because when I think back to that day, it was just like, man, I couldn't take in everything that was, because, you know, think about the perspective of like your first introduction to anything Transformers is the 86 movie. So what is Optimus Prime to you? You know, he's there and then he dies, you know. I always compare it to like people who go into Star Wars Episode 4 where like, you know, you're introduced to Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan dies and you go, oh, that sucks. You know, Obi-Wan died. We're supposed to be sad. But that Luke guy, we got to continue his story and see where he's going because he's the chosen one. And I kind of compare that to Transformers, where if your first experience was the 86 movie, Optimus was the Obi-Wan character that after he passes, you're still looking at the journey of this hot rod character. And that's kind of what happened with me, where I was introduced to the movie. I fell in love with the Transformer brand because of it. I go home after seeing the movie and I'm like, I want to play with these toys. I want to see these toys. I asked my French Canadian dad that I want the red and yellow robot. And he goes, and you have to understand, this was like, I didn't see it obviously the first week. I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks after it aired in theaters. And I know that he just went to this like clear out place across the street from our house that clearly was selling like discount 1985 product. And he got me Blaster. Red and yellow robot. He wasn't wrong. It wasn't Hot Rod. And that ended up being my first Transformer. And then, I caught this and that of season 2 episodes that were on the air and repeat. And I almost like saw no season 3 episodes, probably just because of the distribution in Canada. But then when G2 came around, that really was my chance to revisit the brand heavily. Not just the older toys that I got to miss that were repackaged, but just the older episodes that were also, in a way, repackaged. for a modern audience. And by modern, I mean as modern as 1993 could be. So that was really my first experience with the brand. And then, of course, it all domino effects from there.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to a lot of that. So what TF generation is your generation and why, even though I think I might already know this one?
People say, like, you know, like, I was born in 83, right? So, you know, early 83. So I'm technically a G1er, as they would list me. You know, grew up, like, you know, generation one was my first taste of it. I, you know, G2 was a big part of that, too, because of the 90s. But look, I've dabbled in it all, watched it all, and while I'm labeled as a G1er, I still think Beast Wars is the greatest thing Transformers has ever done. And yes. And I feel that it's the series that, despite my favorite character is Hot Rod, despite that, you know, I love those car designs and stuff, I just lean on Beast Wars so much because it was just so good. And when Beast Wars was out between 95 and 99, that was exactly my high school years. Grade 7 to, in Canada, we go up until grade 11, and then there's, it gets foggy, that area. But, you know, 95 to 99, that was Beast Wars' run. That's when I was in high school. And it was just freaking amazing. You know, so I want to say I'm a G, like, it's, I'm labeled as a G1 guy just by technicalities, but I feel like I'm a Beast Wars guy at heart, like a 90s kid. But I'm not.
Just waiting for one of these guests to say, oh, my generation was Transformers Animated, and for everybody that's listening to lose their shit.
It already happens. It already happens all the time. the conversation we had off the air about our mom. Yep. You know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I totally agree as far as Beast Wars is concerned of it being just kind of the pinnacle of everything. So that being said, what other generations of Transformers do you like?
Well, obviously, Beast Wars was born out of that time in the 90s, and we have to give Batman, 1989 Batman Tim Burton and Batman the Animated Series, Bruce Timm, a lot of credit, because those two properties showed toy companies that you could tell a compelling story and still sell a bunch of frivolous toys that have nothing to do with the story, like, you know, Arctic Attack Batman and, you know, stuff that's not in the show. And the show doesn't have to exist to sell toys, so you could tell an ongoing serial story, and you could still, you know, which then led to X-Men the Animated Series, Spider-Man the Animated Series, Gargoyles, Men in Black, and then, of course, all the mainframe stuff, Beast Wars, Reboot, Shadow Raiders, all these compelling, well-written 90s cartoons. That, yeah, there was the goal to sell toys, but they didn't have to dumb it down to sell toys because they knew that you could still sell that Cheetor figure and have a deep, compelling story about characters and stuff like that. So I Beast Wars will always be my number one, even though, like, I love the 86 movie and I love G1. Beast Wars is just, anytime someone says to me G1's better than Beast Wars as a show, I just ask why. And they really can't explain that answer. And I don't want to be like fighting with people, but it's like, tell me why. I'm really curious. I'm really curious why. After that, I would fall on Transformers Animated. Again, same kind of spirit. Derek Wyatt was a fan of the brand. Marty Eisenberg, who also was a showrunner for it. People who really understood the characters and how to tell a story with a smaller cast instead of just trying to sell toys. There's a reason why the Transformers Animated toy line is as short as it is. It's a very short toy line. It's actually the shortest main line of Transformers outside of Machine Wars in terms of, like, product put out measured against fiction and stuff like that. So it's very fascinating. But then you add on to the fact that, oh, there's the Japanese stuff, Master Force, very unique take on Transformers with humans and stuff like that. I have a very soft spot for Transformers Master Force because it was trying to be different than everything that was Transformers at the time. And after that, you know, what do you want to throw in there? Let's throw in a little bit of Victory. Let's throw in a little bit of maybe even Cyberverse isn't too bad, the new series. You know, there's all Transformers series have something to enjoy about them. They're not all perfect 100%. Even something like Beast Wars has its growing pains in, like, season one. But in general, I think they all have something to add. Just some are clearly superior than others.
Agreed. Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. So do you like or loathe the Bayverse, or are you just indifferent to it?
The Bayverse is a necessary evil in terms of here's the reality. OK, and again, people are going to hate the truth. The average moviegoer, the average consumer of product is not the sharpest person in the world. Maybe the person listening will believe that they are the contradiction of that, but most people don't want something too complicated. When 2006 came around, Transformers Cybertron was on its way out. Transformers was in a weird place. It wasn't doing terrible in toy sales, but it wasn't exactly shaking things up either. And Hasbro really needs something to be different. And the truth with the Transformer brand was every time there was a renaissance for Transformers, it was just after coming off of one of its worst years. So when Beast Wars came out, which completely shook up the brand, it was coming off of the terrible sales of Generation 2. The Project Generation 2 did not work out. Let's put it this way. And if you actually dive deep into Beast Wars' history and why it was created, it's super fascinating. It was pretty much like McDonald's making suggestions and stuff because they wanted to do a toy promotion. And it was them that were going like, yeah, let's do animals. Like, yeah, that'd be cool. And characters like Prowl became Cheetor. Characters like Megatron that were supposed to be like a sea turtle ended up becoming a crocodile and then a T-Rex. It's very fascinating when you dive into that history. But essentially, Transformers always, when it's at its lowest, it then bounces back with something different. And regardless if people love or hate those movies, the one thing that it did great about for the brand was it targeted an audience of people that normally would have not been Transformer fans. That 2007 movie, which is a decent movie for a beginning, middle, and end, it did its job. And we could get in, we could spend all day explaining the specifics of why it is so much better than, let's say, the others from a writing standpoint, primarily because of the writer strike in 2009 and Michael Bay having less involvement with that first movie. But at the end of the day, we have pretty much a brand that was kind of in a weird place in 2006. Then this movie comes out and it did the same for Transformers as it did for X-Men in 2001, Spider-Man in 2002, and the Avengers in 2009. You know, like it became a more global thing. It became a more interesting thing to a lot of countries that just didn't have exposure to Transformers, but now they have this movie to be their exposure to Transformers. And I saw firsthand people that I knew my entire life that knew I was a Transformer fan, that had no interest in the brand. They might have been a Star Wars guy. They might have been a Tokidoki collector or vinyl collector or something. And then all of a sudden, because of this Michael Bay movie, good or bad is your own opinion. And in my opinion, most of them pretty bad. But good or bad, regardless, people connected with them in a way that we connected with those television shows of Transformers. And they're going out and buying a Blackout figure or going out and buying a Starscream figure. And to me, at the end of the day, if they're consuming something and then it makes them want to leave the theater and then go to Toys R Us, Walmart, Target, whatever, and then buy the product, it did its job. If the fiction is crap and the story is boring, well, that's a whole other story. That's a whole other statement. That's what we could go back and go, oh, Beast Machines was crap. Oh, we could go back and go Robots in Disguise 2015 was crap. That's a whole other discussion. But if it sells toys, then it did what it was supposed to do. And I'll tell you something, 2007 movie, 2009 movie, even more so. Revenge of the Fallen is garbage as a storytelling movie, but it was the peak of Transformers will never be as high as it ever was than it was in 2009 and 2010. It'll never be as big as it ever was since. I used to never think that was even possible. I used to say 1985 was the peak of Transformers' pop culture shake because 1985 was like peak G1. Everyone was parodying Transformers, bootlegs, everything. You know, if you saw a transforming toy, it was a Transformer, even if it was a GoBot or a converter or a McChangeable. And I thought we would never reach that. And then in 1997, Beast Wars hit it big. It was the number one selling boys' toys. It beat out the N64. At Toys R Us and everything. So, Beast Wars is huge, but it still wasn't that G1 peak that 1985 was. And I was like, oh, we'll never be there. We'll never have that again. And then, Revenge of the Fallen came around and said, hold my beer, you know, and was like, we're going to show you how to sell toys like we never sold toys ever before. And it just killed it. Just killed it. So those movies, necessary evil, regardless.
Beats me.
And there you have it.
Yeah. So. I go on long rants, but, you know,
it's true.
To give a good perspective.
Yeah, the movies have not, they've paled in comparison since, so despite what they've tried. So you mentioned that your first Transformer was Blaster. What is like one of your favorite Transformers that you got as a kid?
Well, the irony is despite the fact that I have one of the biggest Transformer collections in the world, literally between 1986 and 1995, I had about 12 figures. It was Blaster, a broken G1 Optimus Prime trailer that I got from a thrift store, and a bunch of Micromasters that I literally like traded with friends at schools, like those four packs. And that was it. And that was literally my whole entire Transformer collection forever. And of course, you know, you can mix in a few bootleg GoBots in there, but that's a different story. And some McChangeables, McDonald's stuff. But it wasn't until Beast Wars came around that really my collection started to swell. And of course, you know, 95 was also the beginning of the internet. So I started learning about the online fandom and buying online. And then 1999 with eBay really opened the floodgates. But but if I had to say some of my favorites, like from my childhood, I love that Blaster toy. I used to pretend he was my Autobot City just because he was so big and my little Micromasters paled in comparison. I loved Overdrive, a.k.a. Hyperdrive, a.k.a. my stand-in Hot Rod figure at the time, little Micromaster. Those were the ones I loved as a kid. As a teenager, obviously, Transmetal Cheetor, you know, what was another really good one? I was turning my head. Transmetal Cheetor, Original Cheetor, Optimus Primal, Depth Charge, another really good one. K-9, all those Beast Wars ones. At that point, I'm not so much a kid, but a teenager, but, you know, falls into that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Growing up, did you and your friends ever pretend to play Transformers at, say, school recess or something? So, like, you're going to say, I'm going to be Hot Rod and this, that, and the other thing.
Odd transitional era. Again, discovering Transformers in 1986. What came out the year after that? Some Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
They kind of did we pretend to be Ninja Turtles in the place? Yes. So I came around to Transformers right when it was on its way out and the Turtles took over the world. So unfortunately not.
Oh, boy. All right. Question 7's a big one because I already know one answer, but we actually give people 4 choices and they can choose 4 of these. Who is your end-all, be-all favorite character from any Transformers incarnation? You can pick 1 Decepticon, 1 Autobot, 1 Maximal, 1 Predacon.
Obviously, Hot Rod for Autobot. Mm-hmm. If we're not allowed Hot Rod, I'll
put No, you're allowed. You're okay. Dead. How dare I deny you your favorite character? Come on now.
Because it's so cut and dry. You know, I mean, you Google Proto Man Hot Rod, you're going to see the museum, as people call it on Google.
I told Steve off air, he's like, "Oh, I only have this and this." I'm like, "Okay, well, fine. Doing the All Things Transformers featured banner for Proto Man is going to be easy because it's all Hot Rod all the time."
Talk about dull, Daniel.
So obviously Hot Rod for Autobot. For Decepticon, I have to go with Shockwave.
At long last, I serve you, my liege, under my true colors. Rise, Shockwave, my most loyal servant.
Always loved Shockwave. Going back and reading the Marvel books with Simon Furman and stuff and Bob before that, I don't know, just really liked Shockwave. I love the way he was depicted there. Maximal, that's a tough one. That's like I want to say Cheetor just because of his growth overall, like even going into Beast Machines.
Yep.
But Dinobot really also slides in there too, you know, so, but I'll go with Cheetor just because he has the more long-term lane.
Hey, look at me! I'm a cheetah! No, I'm Cheetor!
Interesting.
Interesting? Optimus, the word is spot on smooth.
It's a crime.
Hey, I wonder what these gizmos are for.
It's time to shred some bread.
What do you say we give these new bods a test drive?
I am transformed.
And Predacon, I'd have to go with Beast Wars Megatron because I think he's the greatest Transformer villain of all time. Any series, any faction, anything. And I've said to David Kay, who I've hung out with, I've said like to David Kay, that depiction is probably one of the greatest depictions. Like I used to say, long before, you know, Josh Brolin got to be Thanos and everything, I was like, you should have been Thanos. You know
it
what I mean?
It was so weird for me, because I had already seen Beast Wars and Beast Machines. It was so weird for me watching X-Men Evolution and Apocalypse, and I'm like, wait, what? Wait a minute. What the hell is Megatron doing as the – yeah, you're right. You're 1,000% right.
You want a weirder one? Like during around that time too, David Kay, voice of Beast Wars Megatron, for people that don't know, he was also doing male enhancement commercials, Cialis. So you'd be on the radio, or you'd be like, you know, listening to the television, and then you hear in the background, you know, a non Sean Connery sounding Beast Wars Megatron, because that's what he said his Megatron was. Sean Connery meets a snake. Mm-hmm. He all of a sudden, do you have problems in the bedroom? Yes. You know, like, it's just like, oh my goodness. So, funny stuff.
Are you looking for stiff competition?
Oh my God. All right. Yeah. What are some other Transformers characters you like?
I lean more towards, this comes from my background in racing and street racing and mechanics. I love the race car Transformer characters. So Nitro Convoy, a.k.a. Override. I like the male version slightly better because the original dub really did a good job of making him like a cocky street racer. Nitro Convoy from Galaxy Force, also known as Cybertron. Road King from Transformers Master Force, also known as Slapdash in the English dub, I guess. They never really did an English dub from Master Force. He was the Power Master Formula One car. I really like... in IDW, the depiction of Blur in that one. Spotlight Blur by Casey Collar is probably no joke, top five favorite Transformer individual issue comic book of all time, just because of the racing culture of Transformers and how it's depicted. And it's so similar to the real Formula One world. So yep. I really like that a lot coming from that world, you know, like it's just, it was like, ooh, you guys, someone did their research, you know, like it really hit close. So I love those a lot, like just those race car kind of Transformer characters. But, you know, at the same time, really like Windblade, like the way she's being made into kind of the Wonder Woman of the Transformer brand. I like how she's being built up. Who else? Obviously, like, again, Beast Wars, practically almost everyone on Beast Wars is like my favorite character. Cause like, how could you not like Pterosaur? How could you not like Waspinator? How could you not like, you know, Rhinox, Primal, you know, Rat Trap? Like everyone's a 10 out of 10 character. It's so tough with that show to like ignore them. So I just include them all, you know, like they're all good.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and even Beast Wars, I'm going to say something controversial here, folks, and I'm not going to call it a hot take because I hate the whole hot take culture we currently live in. However, I will say the proto-humans in Beast Wars are easily the best humans outside of cartoon versions of Spike and Sparkplug.
I would say Master Force, but, you know,
I will say specifically the American cartoons.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah. Then I would let me try to think about that one.
The only other one, maybe, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, because again, if we're not counting Japanese stuff, because as much as people don't like Energon, like as a show, the Japanese version, Super Link Kicker, was much better depicted in that one. And I mean, look, Kicker was wielding the Star Saber sword and cutting down Transformers, so pretty badass in my opinion, you know. So,
are there any Transformers characters you hate?
Only one, really. People ask me this a lot. And it's kind of funny. I've never been a fan of Night Scream from Beast Machines. And it's a double dose. It's number one, I don't like his toy. Like, he had like a weird, oversized, extremely fragile, out of scale toy. And then in the show, it's like, you know, Cheetor was supposed to be the kid character in the original one. He's not this Beast Machines. Now he's, you know, he's evolved to kind of a leader character. So they're like, we need a new, and they're like, hey, remember how like Hot Rod was the kid character and now he isn't? So we have Wheelie. How could we like channel that Wheelie vibe, but make him also have an extremely ugly design? You know, like his design is ugly. He has that weird, like, I don't know, Brad Pitt, like 90s haircut, you know, like just, it was so weird. Like his design, the fact that he has to scream and a little thing comes out of his, it's a weird design. His origin is kind of weird because, hey, there's bats on Cybertron apparently, and the organics and stuff. So there's a lot of weird things lumped in with him.
Nice upgrade.
Outside of that, there's very little other characters I hate. Like, you know, it's something where, like, you know, you could be kind of passive on someone where, like, oh, Bullhorn from Master Force, he kind of did nothing. Or, like, you know, like, even, like, you could say, like, someone that could say, like, oh, you know, my favorite character in G1's cartoon was Thundercracker. And it's like, okay, tell me your favorite Thundercracker line, you know, like, but even those ones, I don't hate them. You know what I mean? They're just kind of there.
I can tell you my favorite Thundercracker line.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but even without our new weapon, I can fry your circuits extra crispy. Megatron would love it. But that geeky Starscream would take all the credit. On the other hand, if I let you wreck our new weapon, Megatron might blame Starscream, which would make me very happy.
Thundercracker! You putrid traitor!
What's the matter, fearless leader? You and Starscream look real geeky. Maybe the Autobots aren't such wimps after all.
Does he have to make that awful thunder noise? I've got a headache.
And they call themselves Decepticons.
what episode? I forget what episode it's from, but it's like, oh, Starscream, am I being geeky enough for you? Or whatever it was.
I have a good one. It's Reflector. All right, Reflector, let's see what you could see. I think
see.
That was,
yep.
Either that's Thundercracker or Skywarp.
That's Thundercracker.
Is it? Okay. I don't remember. There's a lot of characters that kind of could fly under the radar in terms of boring, but there's no one I've ever really hated. Like, I think Starscream's the only one where it's, Nightscream was the only one where it was just like, if he wasn't here, I think it would kind of help the show a little bit. Like, we kind of move it forward a little bit.
Probably. Over here, and I know what the answer to this one's going to be. I think Steve and I know almost all the answers. We've had a few spoilers here, folks, but over your lifetime, as you got older, did your interest in the Transformers franchise grow stronger or get weaker?
Oh, stronger. Of course. This is an answer that really has to do with every individual, but I mean, considering where I am in the brand now, you know, and the opportunities that I got, like if you would have told me in high school, you're going to write Tarantulas' bio one day and manipulate how he's going to be Unicronian and stuff, I would have never believed it. And then those opportunities came for me that I would be able to write official licensed Hasbro bios for Beast Wars characters and stuff that I, you know, grew up in high school. So, you know, obviously it got stronger. And then, of course, you know, the podcast and everything really becoming a big part of my day-to-day life and stuff. So, of course, 200%.
Yep. All right, Steve, take over.
This is getting quite amusing.
All righty. So, was there ever a moment in your life when you thought you were through with everything of Transformers?
the only time ever that there was just a glimmer of a second where there was doubt was back in 1997 when I discovered that the Transformers came from a Japanese line called Diaclone and Microman that had nothing to do with the brand. That it wasn't like, I remember reading all of that and then learning about it online. And to this day, I think the website was called Pre-Transformers. That was the name of it. The individual created, I don't know who he is, but big shout out to him because he opened up this Proto Man's mind all those years back then, not knowing that. And I remember going like, oh, that kind of sucks, you know, that Transformers wasn't an original. It's like, imagine if like you learned years later that the X-Men were really just like a ripoff of like some Chinese, you know, comic book, and it was just repackaged for our market in like the 60s. It would totally like change your perspective. And considering that I had this romantic vision of what Transformers was up until 97, and then reading that, it kind of made me go like, man, that kind of sucks. And it kind of like lowered me a little bit on my feelings about the brand. But then as you start digging more and you learn about the history of it, and, you know, like you're looking at Soundwave's instruction booklet for G1, and you see that there's this blue tape across his chest because they were hiding Cassette Man written on it. You know, you start to appreciate just the deeper lore of it and how the people that created it back in like the late 70s for Diaclone and Microman were still with that brand to this very day. You know, like, you know, Yoke-san and Takashi Kuniharu and all of those guys. Kojin Ono, that's another one too, the guy who created Sunstreaker, the very first car robot. Like, those guys are still around in a lot of ways. So I appreciate, you know, like that even though they came from something different, the people who gave life to them are still around to give life to them years after that when it became a Transformer brand. So I think that was the only time that ever happened. But otherwise, it just kept getting stronger and stronger. As every iteration came out, it might even be, you know, it might be a weaker iteration than the past one, like let's say an Armada or an Energon. But I still dived into it as much as if it was the greatest thing ever, just because I love the brand so much, and I was always interested in learning more about new characters and new twists and turns. So that's probably the best answer I could give.
That's a very good answer.
Thank you.
So with the internet giving birth to the fans all having a voice about what they like or don't like about Transformers, do you find that your voice gets lost in the shuffle, or do you think that it just gets louder?
It's going to be an arrogant answer with that one. Because of my place in the fandom, no. But I think that, again, that's an answer that's uniquely to other people. I've said this for years. With any fandom, there's always going to be 10% of people that are absolutely just a waste of space. And this, depending on how big that fandom is, will determine how much of a headache that is. So if a fandom only has, 100 people in it, then that 10% means, oh, there's 10 guys that are dicks, you know? And then when that fandom is 1,000 people, 10,000, 20,000, and before you know it, a forum or a message board or a Twitter account, you know, has a million Transformer fans, you could kind of get this perspective where it's like, oof, you're going to get lost in a lot of the, you know, G1 or you're not a real fan. Or I've had guys tell me that I'm a phony, that I'm not a real fan because of, let's say, my love of Beast Wars, let's say, or something.
Well, that's just Prime.
And that's fine. Look, that's fine. Look, they want to say, because I know who I am, and that's all mm-hmm. that really matters, you know? Like, you know, to say I'm a phony and then I just kind of, like, I wish the camera was on and I could just look around and go, okay, like, you know, sure, fine. But, I mean, my voice doesn't get lost. I mean, I'm going to come off as bragging, but
stop.
Yeah.
Since you don't want to brag about yourself, I'll brag about you for you. Look, folks, as soon as he opens his mouth and spits his knowledge upon you, you are just going to be schooled no matter what. There, like, I don't even know. I think it was because of our late great friend Gary Clark that you and I even, I think it was because of him that you and I even kind of connected at the time. And like I said at the beginning of this podcast, we've done, at this point in time, 29 podcasts since 2009. You, even when you and I are talking off air for 40 minutes before we start an hour and 40-minute show, It's just simple, nonsensical. You know, it's common sense. It's just regular Canadian dude. I mean, it's, you know, who loves Transformers. I mean, you know, that's what it is.
Being Canadian helps because you don't have to have crazy political stances or anything like that. You can just be a dude.
There you go.
I think that's what helps me a lot. But let's put it this way. I do a live stream every Saturday. There's three different people, both former and present from Hasbro, that are in those chats. My voice gets heard. It gets heard. Let's put it that way.
Nice.
Yeah. And people know who I'm talking about. I don't want to call out their names, but they know who they are for sure.
So what is your Transformers personal anthem song? Like, example, Stan Bush, The Touch, or maybe a theme from one of the programs.
There was a small Transformer convention in the UK called Auto Assembly, and they had a theme song called Ground Zero, which was, I believe, Stan Bush changed it into something else. But that really sums up the brand, the fandom, and everything.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars that came here to Earth, caught in their struggle through the whole universe, robotic warriors give it their all, fight in disguise to the victors. In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars that came here to Earth, caught in their struggle through the whole universe.
I think he changed up the song, and then they used it for something else for the movies later on. I think they just called it Transformers. But look up Ground Zero Stan Bush. It's an unknown song that he did for a con or something. I think it was like a theme for like Auto Assembly 2000. I don't know, 8. I could be wrong on this, but I loved that song. That song really encapsulates what's so cool about Transformers and just the lore of it. Like, it's just a very different kind of song that he wrote specifically for that con. And
yeah, I think I've heard that one. That's the one where he says Transformers, Defenders of Truth.
That's the remake version. That's what,
okay.
Before, the word Transformer was never used with it because it was used for like an unlicensed convention. So it was like Ground Zero.
Yep. I've heard the original.
Only
too.
The strong will survive. You know, I like it. It's a good one. You know, like you could say Dare, you could say The Touch. Those are freaking classics that go unrivaled. Even stuff like Hunger and Instrument of Destruction. If you're like a huge Decepticon fan, that should probably be your go to Instruments of Destruction. But and then some of the Japanese ones. Like, oh man, like if you had to ask me probably what my favorite Transformer theme of all time is, it's Hono no Overdrive from Car Robots. Oh, man. I could sing that word for word in Japanese for you. I love that song.
Why we ask, what is your personal anthem?
Yeah, I'll go with that one because Hono no Overdrive is hot-blooded, badass, like, you know, just driving Transformer theme, and it is without a doubt my favorite Transformer theme of all time, without a doubt. Ask it, like people who know me personally in real life, like they at one point that was my alarm clock just to get out of bed, because it would just be like it would ramp you up, you know, you wake up for work or something and be like, yeah, let's do this, you know. Love that. Love them. They'd be like, what the hell is that song? And with the siren at the beginning, meow, 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 meow. It's like, oh, man. Anyways, yeah, I'll go with that one.
Very cool.
Awesome. Awesome. So how often do you go back and rewatch any of the Transformers cartoons?
I find myself watching the 86 movie minimum once a year, and twice because of TFCon sometimes, because they would play it in there, like they played on the big screen. So, but minimum once a year. Beast Wars, I keep catching myself, because what I do is sometimes I'll do like an edit for something. Like I'll take a scene from Beast Wars, and I'll do some kind of funny edit or something for the podcast. And then I just catch myself just watching the whole episode when I was just supposed to be there for that one clip from, I don't know, you know, Guerrilla Warfare or Power Surge or something. So like, I'll just be like, man, I'm just gonna take the next 21 minutes and just watch this and remind myself why, you know, I love this brand so much.
You know, it's funny you say that, because in order to produce the top 100 Transformers characters countdown, which sadly you did not participate in for the Geekcast Radio Network, I went through almost every single American episode and recorded almost every single second of audio, not including intro and outro themes. Every vocal performance, I probably have an MP3 of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
I think Beast Wars, I still revisit once in a while just because of just you could it's the same thing that happened was when I finally got the 86 movie on VHS, I would throw it in the old VHS player for them kids who don't know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like a DVD player, except less life simplicity skills, I guess. And it's one of these things where I would be like, oh, I'm just going to watch just the opening scene with Unicron and maybe, you know, the death of the Autobots in the shuttle. You know what? I'll just finish the attack on Autobot scene. You know what? Maybe I'll just watch after Starscream throws out, you know, and I just would find myself watching the whole movie. And it's kind of the same thing now with Beast Wars, where it's like, I'll just watch that one clip just so I could clip something. And then I just find myself you know what? Let's just fucking watch it all. It's just so good. So good. In terms of the comics and stuff, once in a while, the comics that I find are more like, I don't know, the comics, it's, I find that you read them once and then I think that the impact is not as strong, where I think the only book I've ever went back and reread, I'd have to say, was probably Simon Furman's Regeneration, only just because I really like that one. I know it's a weird one. A lot of people are like, really? Simon Furman Regeneration? I liked what he did. Simon Furman does some good shit sometimes. And Regeneration was one I read it like when it first came out, and then I went back and reread it just to kind of like refresh myself on it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was pretty good. You know, so that's one I could think of, yeah. It's a weird one, but yeah.
Which you just answered the last question Steve has.
Which is? rereading books?
Yeah. We all love TF Comics. Which incarnation do you love and why?
Well, no. See, that one, you know what's a funny one? I loved what Dreamwave was doing with the G1 ongoing. And I kind of wish it continued. Me and Josh Perez, Josh worked with them. And he was one of those guys that was just kind of like, you know, and it wasn't even because of work. It was just like, man, I really liked what they were doing. You know, like, I liked, you know, War Within. War Within was like, for the longest time, it was like, this is the Prime origin story. This is my, like, to me, like, if I had to pick a Prime origin story, I loved what War Within was doing. I loved Dreamwave. Dreamwave was great. And a lot of people, I know they rag on Pat Lee and stuff and everything that went on behind the scenes, which is totally factual. I agree with that too. But I liked what they were doing at the time. They were, you know, maybe it was one of those things, you know, burn twice as hard, burn out twice as quick. You know, maybe that was one of just kind of one of those things with Dreamwave. But it's something that I love that. Simon Furman's run of the Matrix Quest up until the end of issue 80 of the Marvel books, great. Bob's stuff with Shockwave at the beginning, great. Let me try to think of it. The G.I. Joe Dreamwave versus Transformer book was fun. Tom Ciccoli's GoBots book was great. So off the wall. Great book. If anyone wants to read, I don't want to even talk about it because there's so many spoilers. The one book that a lot of people are shocked that I don't praise a lot, and it's funny because I'm such close friends with him, and maybe that's what created that, James Roberts' run of More Meets the Eye. Okay books, not like, you know, the people like them a lot. Anyone who's been to a Transformer convention in the past 5 years, they're always seeing me with James. I've known James for a while. And James even himself, he rags on me because he knows how I'm not a big fan of how he's written Star Saber or all that stuff. He's like, oh, like someone will come to him at his table, like we'll do a signing, and mm-hmm. they'll be like, oh, I love how you did Star Saber. And then he'll just turn to me and go, yeah, at least some people like it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I have a very specific in my mind of what Star Saber is as a character. Star Saber was the first ever Japanese toy I bought. I, you know, used my own money working at a telemarketing place to buy this $150, only $150, mint in box D1 Star Saber from eBay back in 1999, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I just had a close connection with that character, loved Transformers Victory because it was so cool. And James's version just didn't gel with the Proto Man. So, you know, there's parts I like about the book, but there's a lot of parts also, let's just say, not my cup of tea. That's all I'll say, pretty much.
I did, and sadly, maybe I can mend this relationship at some point or another. My buddy Ryan and I, the Uneven Flow, we did the entire run of IDW from phase two up until the end of, you know, when Unicron shows up. What hooked me was, I believe it was my other buddy Ender, was like, oh, look at what happened to Shockwave with Shadow Play and all of that. You know, the whole thing with Shockwave, I was like, I'm sold. You know,
well, that, and again, I love Shockwave's easily one of my favorite Decepticon characters. In my mind, I hope this isn't spoilers for people, but whatever. In my mind, not Onyx Primal. Not in my, the way that Aaron Archer was writing the original 13 and stuff, mm-hmm. And how that was being built up with the Covenant of Primus, not how I would, you know what I mean? It's just, you know what it is? And it's not against James. People could love it. Don't attack me for it. It's just, I guess, the way that it would settle in my own fanon, I guess is the way to put it. Not how I would do it. And it's not in the way that, like, you know, I could look at Armada Blur and go, that's not how Blur should be, but that's Armada Blur. You get it?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah. Each of these characters, like, Armada Blur is not the same as G1 Blur.
Yeah, it's not. It's so I could let that slide. But when I see, like, James's, you know, there's some really good ideas there, James. You have a lot of really good stuff. And then you do these things, and I go, James, you know, like I loved, you know, Overlord. Like, there's certain things that were really good, and there was other things that are like, yeah, come on, James. You know, like, it is what it is. Like, it's that's a topic. Like, a lot of times people ask why I don't talk about the comics on the podcast, mm-hmm. because I have a lot of opinions that are very spoilery to kind of talk about. And some people still haven't read the book, so I rather they read them and form their own opinions. I rather they not just take mine, which is the worst thing. Because I've seen people that I see them parrot my opinions. You know what I mean? Lord. And I don't like that. And I don't like that because it's form your own opinion, and you know I won't be like, oh, you're wrong. You're wrong. Those books are terrible. Everyone's allowed to like their own stuff. You know what I mean?
Yep.
My favorite character is Hot Rod. Historically, for the longest time, one of the hated characters of all time at one point.
People still have the incorrect assumption that he killed Optimus Prime. He didn't. Well, Megatron fired the gun.
Read the original Marvel run of the remakes of the comics. That's all I say.
Technically, it's Blaster's fault.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
He called Prime to Earth.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that you know what?
It's Blaster's fault.
No, it's not Blaster's fault. It's Ultra Magnus's fault. Blaster, tell Perceptor. Yeah. So technically, it's Ultra Magnus's fault that Optimus Prime is dead.
You couldn't deal with it, man. It always falls on Magnus.
The pressure got to him.
I can't deal with that now.
That's one very interesting thing about IDW 2.0 that I absolutely love. Is what they did with Magnus. I thought that was so cool.
Interesting take, and I appreciate that they brought it over to the toys afterwards. Again, that's stuff I like. You know, that stuff that's like, okay, you know what? There was a Magnus, but there's other Magnuses. Okay, cool. And it plays with the idea, because here's the thing too, it plays with the idea of what's under that armor. Because historically, for the longest time, before Dreamwave did it, we didn't talk about that. You know what I mean?
No, because we all knew it was just a white Optimus Prime.
When they did Masterpiece Ultra Magnus, not the first white repaint, the actual Magnus armor Magnus,
right. Yeah.
They decided to tackle it where it's like, what white Optimus? You know, like because for that's kind of how it was always done. It wasn't until Dreamwave went, hey, we looked at the toys. There's something under there. And then all of a sudden, Takara's like, oh, really? And then there was like a sea of white Optimus repaints afterwards. Like literally a year after that book came out, you could literally look at the timeline. It wasn't until that last issue of War, I think it was called War and Peace, Volume 2, you know, that happened, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's...
All right, speaking of the toys, my next section is all about toys, and you have to promise me not to roll your eyes with one of these questions, because I am going to be bringing something up that you just don't generally care for, and that's okay. Just promise me don't roll your eyes when I ask it.
Okay.
All right, number 16. How big, because I know it's not small, how big is your Transformers toy collection?
Number undetermined. Last I was counting was at 15,000. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. But you have to understand, every mini-con, every Japanese mini-con, every stupid fast-action Battler 2007 movie toy, every single tiny turbo changer, every single real gear, every single... titanium, you know, like I'm not even talking mainline. I'm just talking
right. You're talking sublines, and I'm like, holy you know, like,
every single like my PVC Japanese PVC collection of G1 Transformers is bigger than most people's Transformer collections. You know what I mean? Like that's 100. It's 120 figures. You know, so it's like. It's just not, we're not even talking G1 Beast Wars, you know, like
yeah. Just the sublines of those lines, the mini lines, yeah.
The videos are out there, the photos are out there.
Oh yes, they are.
Don't take my word on it. Just look at it; you'll understand.
Look, folks. Whether it's All Things Transformers, whether it's Toy Cast,
I just want to cut you off. But I'm not the largest collection in the world.
Okay, but wait a minute. Whether it's All Things Transformers, whether it's Toy Cast, whether it's whatever, in the GCRN circle of friends, Proto Man has the largest Transformers collection in the world, just with the people that we know.
Not to mention the rest of the house that's not Transformers.
That's a discussion for another day on ToyCast. Actually, you were on for about 40 minutes in episode 100, but we have to have a longer discussion about that later.
Shout out to my friend David Cabal. He's like, what don't you collect? Because he knows like the other stuff I collect. And he's like, God damn. You know, like,
yep. Okay, right there, folks. That's why we call him the goddamn Proto Man. Because every reaction to anybody that ever talks to this man, it's like, God damn, man, what don't you collect?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I legit bought a house with the intention of the collection more than anything else. I went into the house. We would go like a realtor would bring us to the house. Went straight to the basement. And I was like, I got to see the basement. The basement was garbage. I don't care how good the kitchen is. I don't care how many master bedrooms, you know, walk-in closet. Basement was garbage. I'm out. And then we found this amazing 12 and a half. And then I just dominated 7 rooms with toys. It's nuts. It's nuts. Well, you know what? It's something that I grew up around that. My father is a toy collector. And again, go on YouTube, type Proto Man Father's Day Special. I went to my parents' house and interviewed him about his toy collection. Just to give people a perspective of where that comes from.
I will embed that video in the post. Okay, the question I said you cannot roll your eyes at, but I know what your opinion is of it already. How do you feel about non-transforming Transformers like this awesome Funko Pop Nemesis Prime I'm holding in my hand?
Look. You know what? You know, I will say this, and this is factual, probably the least popular segments on my podcast ever whenever I bring up Funko Pop. I'm just saying.
And I'm just going to tell you, I guarantee you, maybe not all of them, but on a lot of them, you can see one voice shouting louder than everybody else in the positive when you do those. And that's most definitely me, because I'm like, you're crazy. Yeah, I don't normally do the whole keyboard warrior thing. When it comes to Funko, I will.
You know what, though? The one thing I will say in the defense of Funko Pop is, because a lot of times with other hardcore toy collectors, because I run conventions, so I talk mm-hmm. with these guys all the time, they always compare it to Beanie Babies. And I always tell them, you can't, though, in this case, because Beanie Babies never had a show that they could rest their laurels on. You know, like 10 years from now, no one could go, oh, I really liked Lucky Bear because of that episode or that episode or what was it, Peanut the Elephant, that was like the rarest Beanie Baby at one point. Because at the end of the day, a Funko Pop Darth Vader is still a Darth Vader figure.
Exactly. I mean?
Where 20 years from now, it's still a Darth Vader figure. And so that's where it might not be, it might not hold its MSRP of, what is it, $12.99 or whatever?
Whatever it is, yeah.
I wouldn't know because I don't buy them.
Yeah.
It's something where it's like at the end of the day, you'll still get something for it, you know? And the one thing I'll also give Funko Pop, if there's ever a time where there's a character that doesn't have a figural version of them, Funko will probably be that place.
What you're saying right now is what I was about to say to you. The only half of the reason why besides the fact that I came from Mighty Mugs, and Mighty Mugs are kind of the same thing.
Practically.
Practically. So with Funko, and I've said this forever, to my knowledge, unless it's in doll form, there is no action figure of Cavity Sam from Operation, from the board game Operation. I'm sitting here looking right at Cavity Sam Funko Pop, and he's in action figure form. Anyway, that's a
just one more to add. I'm a big Simpsons guy. I think everyone is, really, when you think about it. Love the Simpsons. Always loved the Radioactive Man comic books, because they actually Bongo Entertainment, which was the guys who did the Simpsons comic books, they did a Radioactive Man comic book line. Collected them as a kid. Always wanted a Radioactive Man action figure. They never made a legitimate Radioactive Man action figure. But
Funko has one.
They made a Funko, which again, it's like, you know, and Simpsons had a Playmates line. Like every character, they did Rainier Wolfcastle Radioactive Man. They never made OG original Radioactive Man, you know, up and at them.
Wow. So heaven forbid, but you, your wife, pets, whatever, everybody is safe, but something happens to the house that is unrecoverable. What is one Transformers toy you could never part with ever?
It's a tie between my first blaster. It's not even a valuable one. My first blaster or my first Hot Rod figure I ever got.
Yeah, and that question was it has nothing to do with value. It has to do with basically you're losing everything. What would you run in to save?
Well, goddamn, you know. talk about a sensory overload. Again, it's something where it's like people say, oh, the lucky draws, the prototypes, you know, the
no.
For me, it's like because if I'm going to lose everything, then I want to walk out of that at least with the first, you know, mm-hmm. like that blaster figure. And then and then the question happens, you lose it all. Where do you go from there? Probably would just start up from the beginning again. as crazy as that sounds, like I would just literally, you know, with the connections and doing cons and stuff, I think I'd be able to build it back. It would obviously, you know, it would take a long while. But and it would be a lot slower than before, where I was really going crazy at one point buying. But it's something that, you know, I'd want to save something that I feel is irreplaceable, as opposed to if I lose Super Hybrid Rodimus Convoy, which is like this rare prototype I own. As crazy as that sounds, that's something that won't hurt as much as that first blaster figure, which I still own to this day.
Yeah, because your first figure is, as long as you still have it, which you just said you do, but, you know, some people don't, but, you know, that first figure means more to you than any...
I love showing it to people because it's so beat up. It's been in sandboxes, And yep. It shows that it's been loved, you know, and I have a G1 blaster in my display that's like pristine, perfect and everything. And then I have the variant with the open door chest, non-open door chest battery. I'm crazy with the variants, but I have all those versions. But then I have this beat up broken yep. antenna on one of his head, original 1985 version that my dad yeah. got. And that will be more important than any other Transformer in my collection, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the most money you spent on a Transformer toy or toy item? So an action.
I was hoping you were going to say item because it would be an item, not a figure.
Yep. Yep.
Most expensive item. We'll do both just for the hell of it, just because mm-hmm. people are. Most expensive item was Super Hybrid Rodimus Convoy, mint in the box, one of probably three in the world. I hate saying the number. $2,100.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's worth it. It's just, you just don't see the story behind that was Takara made those along with Galvatron and RC. And then there was a huge power failure in Japan combined with a huge heat wave. These were made out of soft vinyl PVC plastic. They almost all got destroyed. The one that I have, the arms are warped and the legs are warped, but it's still pretty together, and it has the box still.
Wow.
I managed to get it from a collector that, like, you know, there's certain collectors that they're off the radar. They just have these crazy collections, and they just
hoard stuff
secretly. He was just unloading. He was getting into other stuff, and he just got rid of his Transformer. And it was a Japanese collector. And going through friends of friends and friends, managed to get it. I always say it's not about how much money you have in the world. Like if Bill Gates tomorrow wanted to buy every Transformer, you still wouldn't be able to have what I have because it's more about opportunity than it is money. And those were opportunities. And man, like that thing is, it's a piece of history. It's something that I would like to, you know, like I don't care if they reissue it. I would like it if it ever got reissued because it has a cool aesthetic to it. It was done in that Ox design, Japanese Rodimus style. Has great box art that uses control art that never really has been used anywhere else in Transformers lore. A very weird piece. And that's like toy wise. Yeah. And then when you go down, there's all kinds of lucky draws and weird stuff. Item wise, same thing. 2007 movie comes out. The original writer of the 86 movie, Ron Freeman, goes, huh, people like Transformers now. I wonder if I got anything in my garage when I worked on that. He goes through his garage. Guess what he finds? Animation cells. Tons of them. He brings these animation cells to Tony Bacala of TFW 2005. Tony obviously pieces out these cells and go, I know who's going to want this Cyclonus. I know who's going to want this. And I know who's going to want these four cells of Rodimus and Hawkeye. Four animation cells, $2,000, right to Ron.
Oh, my God.
So $500 a piece.
Yeah.
Ron sent them to me. He did a handwritten letter, and then he sent me a Polaroid of him and Stan Lee together when Stan was still with us. Because him and Stan Lee are like best friends in real life.
Yeah.
And so he took a Polaroid with Stan, and they're holding like Iron Man animation cells for some reason. And it's a polar, like, it's a nice signed everything as an extra, like, because, you know, when you send a guy $2,000, it's gonna make an effort. So nice handwritten letter, you know, oh, sorry about killing Optimus Prime. Thank you for buying this. And just these really cool cells that came from the early production. And what's cool about the cells is if you look at the Rodimus cells written in little ink, it says Old Hot Rod. Because they didn't know the name yet for the character for the trademark. So,
oh, wow.
Little cool piece of history there, too. With same thing, like Unicron was called Ingestor. And little things like that. They didn't know the names yet for some of those characters. So voice acting is usually one of the last steps when it comes to creation and stuff. So knowing the names on a script. And Ron said there was like four different scripts, and you know, that's a whole other topic, but
so
what's crazy is like when you get under that 2000, there's stuff that's coasting in that area. But there was a time I was making really good money, but still living with my parents. And when you're working a really good paying job and you're not paying rent or food or anything like that, you can kind of do stupid, shit like that. Yeah. Today it would be a different story. Like, I mean, buying Unicron from HasLab was kind of almost like, ooh, yeah, that's going to hurt. And that was like 600, but back then 600 would have been nothing, you know?
Yeah. All right.
Mortgages.
Yes. I know you don't have one, but again, the reason why I asked this
not
question.
Not anymore.
No. Not the mortgage. The next question, the last question I have for this section, I know you don't have a story like this, but the reason why I ask this is because at 6 years old, my dad said I was too old to play with toys and sold all.
I do have a story. It's not Transformers, but I might as well share it anyway.
Do you have a my parents got rid of my toys story?
And so I think this is the first time I'm ever talking about it publicly because it's a cool story that happened – a good thing that came out of COVID, let's put it this way. The only thing my parents ever got rid of my toy collection, because again, coming from a family of a father that was a toy collector, why would that even happen? There was no like crazy garage sale where everything got liquidated. The only thing my mother ever got rid of that hurt was when I was a kid, I had a huge pedal car, huge one of Kit from Michael Knight from Knight Rider. And what was cool about this pedal car, it even had the lights on the front and you pushed a button, on the dash and it talked and everything. My mom gave that away. And then years later, I ended up finding out this thing is super rare. Like there's very few of them out there. So I was always on the lookout for this car, right? COVID happens, right? And then all these people who need money quickly start getting rid of these top tier ticket items. It shows up on eBay. I show it to my mom. I'm like, remember this? Like, and my mom's like, do you want it? I'm like, what? and she's like, I feel so bad about getting rid of it. And you like telling me as a kid, like, how could you do that? She's like, we'll pitch in 50-50 and we'll get it. And so we bought the Kit car. It's in my garage right now. Isn't that ironic? You know, the pedal car is in the garage. And there's this great photo of me when I was like, I think 2 or 3 years old of me in that car. And what I want to do one day when I have kids, I want to take my son, take a picture of him in the car.
Yeah.
And have that, like me with it when I was two. And like, that's the only time that's ever really happened. Because we were in a family where like, you know, my dad was a toy collector. So like that garage sale would never happen. Cause my dad's mind was like, oh, you're getting rid of stuff that's valuable. What are you doing?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know what it was? It was a big pedal car, and I think because it just took space in the house that we lived in at the time.
Probably, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think, her logic.
I remember having – I didn't have the pedal car. I had the Knight Rider big wheel, and I love it. It didn't have lights or sounds, but it had the red scanner sticker. I didn't even care if it was stickers. I just had it, and I just enjoyed the hell out of it when I was a kid.
I didn't even know that existed. Oh, that's interesting.
You didn't even – really? Seriously? The Knight Rider big wheel? That was like everywhere.
Ertl did the toys. Like they did all the toys and stuff. I think the Michael Knight was like a 9-inch figure.
Yeah.
They did all of those. They did the die casts, and then Ertl did the Powertrons, which are their bootleg of Transformers. And there is an official 100% transforming Knight Rider robot figure out there by Ertl. Look it up, Powertron Knight Rider. You know, so that exists. I didn't know that there was a big wheel though. That's interesting.
Really?
Interesting. I didn't know that. I try to pride myself on this knowledge, but there's always something to learn, as I always say. You can always learn something.
Yep.
Relax. Enjoy the ride.
Alrighty. So if you could voice any Transformers character,
Hot Rod.
I can't even hit my mute button so Steve can answer, can ask the questions. And I'm like, you don't even have to.
Without question. I just feel like, everything I've done up to this point, that's the last thing I need to do. Voice a character, but more specifically that character. Because I got to write Hot Rod's bio for like BotCon stuff. So I felt like got that done. You know, I got to write comic books that featured him as a character in it. Got that done. So, you know, Judd Nelson, step aside, brother. Give me a chance. Let's just fulfill that bucket list.
Talk about dull, Daniel.
Outside of that, I don't know. An original character would be cool. You know, something like a cool racing character. Make a new character. That'd be cool. Not just an old one.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel with Beast Wars Megatron.
Well, David Kay is...
Yes.
I can't even imagine.
Replace him, but yeah. I can do the voice. So
you can't replace him, but Steve can get his blessing to replace him.
Archaic Energon Guzzlers, how dare they? Unwilling as I must to follow my namesake's instructions, and yet it all be down to this. A day of reckoning with those who made us slaves. You know, I can't do it, but yeah.
Steve, take over.
Yeah, well, do you remember when Kingdom dropped?
Yeah.
Do you remember the vitriol that came out afterward?
Well, I did. I was not happy with it. It is what it is.
So
it is what it is.
For fun, I wrote down the lines verbatim of some of the lines that were read in Kingdom for Beast Megatron, and I redid them.
Which is sad because it's Netflix with their voice acting, which they could have hired you because there's no union.
Oh, I would have done it for free. I was just like,
I would too. Trust me.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I don't know. I would love.
That's to a whole other topic. Oh yeah. God.
No, I would just love to be a part of a voice cast to some degree, like just as you were saying, just because.
If not Hot Rod, I'd like an original character. In all honesty, I'd like to make it my own. I don't want to be like do Rhinox and like Richard Newman's history. Is there or something? I'd like to do something where it's like it's a character that could be me. It could be my own. And it's not something that's like selfish. It's more like I feel bad. Like if I did a Tigatron, there's, Blue Man.
Nobody's going to be compared to the original.
Yeah, and that's harder. That's a big hill to climb. Like I feel like, what was his name who did Robots in Disguise?
Neil Kaplan?
Neil Kaplan. Neil, like when he had to do Prime, and... he had the toughest job of doing that because even when Gary Chalk did Prime and Armada and stuff, he had that primal lineage at least with him. So he was able to get away with it. Same thing with David Kay with Megatron. And those were Armada versions and stuff. So it's a little bit different too, you could argue. But it's always tougher when you have to do a character that has such a history and people have such a strong association. Like imagine a Starscream today that doesn't have anything even slightly relating Chris Latta rumbling in there. It doesn't exist. It can't exist. It can't. Like you look at Michael Dobson that did, or was it Paul Dobson, whoever did the Dobson that did Armada Starscream and on, is it Paul? Okay.
I think
every single one of them, they're just channeling Chris Latta. It's just there and you can't take that away. So it's something where it's the same thing where whatever character is going to come, you kind of don't have that ability to be original anymore and actually voice act. There's this high expectation of you got to do your own take. You're doing a Grimlock. It's me Grimlock. You're stuck in that kind of bubble. And yeah, you could try to do something different, but then right away you separate the fans. Some people might like your new take. Some people might not like it. So it's so much safer. Like there was a character in Cyberverse that was called Thunder Howl, right? They could have easily called that character like Silverbolt, like Beast Wars Silverbolt. But then right away, now everyone's expecting a Scott McNeil Silverbolt performance. You call it Thunder Howl, and now it could be whatever it needs to be. Yep. You know what I mean? And that's the safe thing. So I would love like an original character, some like, Racerbot or something. It'd be cool. Yeah.
I will say, though, that there have been several voice actors to distinguish themselves when voicing Starscream. Yes, most of the Starscreams that we get sound, they have Latta-isms in them. I remember almost a decade ago now when we interviewed Steve Bloom. Steve Bloom said they wanted him to do his own take on it for Prime. But when they wanted him to do, to impersonate Latta or to bring out a Latta part of it, they would basically in the booth just give him jazz hands. Once he got jazz hands, he's like, okay, this is G1. I have to, flip. Anytime that Prime Starscream is going, over top of Prime Megatron, it's like, that's Bloom's Latta. Yep. Kenny did an interesting job because Kenny had to voice them all with the clones and everything else. And Yeah.
Well, he also channeled more of Lotta, I feel, than like Steve Bloom or than what Frank Todaro has done, and well, I loved all three of those takes.
Not to mention, animated has Sue Blue, voice director, so she's really, you know, probably getting that G1 flavor too. Derek Wyatt also probably influencing it. You know, like there was when it came to voice acting in animated, there was a strong push for G1 with that. Very look at the voice actors that were taken for some of those characters. They're original voice actors because of Derek just going, "Hey Sue, could you get John for Blur? You know, hey Sue, could you get Judd for Hot Rod?" Like there were, you know, even getting Weird Al for Wreck-R, even though it's not Eric Idle, but you
right.
see the
it's
you see
still,
the, you see yeah, the connection.
There. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, there's a lean on that. Too.
There are two moments in animated that one I cried and one I fell out of bed on a Saturday morning. The one I cried at, and it's just because, and you know, Daniel, because you're the same way as I am, super Rodimus fanboy, as soon as he opened his mouth and it was Judd, I was like, holy shit. And then when we all knew that it was Corey Burton doing Long Arm and Shockwave, when the colors changed in season 3, I was watching it on Cartoon Network.
My true colors. That was a really
– when that scene happened, I literally fell out of my bed and I was
– Funny story with Judd, with animated. I wish I still had my old flip phone. This shows how long ago this was. Because me and Derek, we got pretty tight like in 2008, 2009. He texted me and he's like, Judd's recording the lines right now. And then he sent me, and I still have the flip phone, but I don't know if the, and then he sent me an image when the prototype for the Hot Rod figure came out.
Uh-huh.
And he had it in his hand and he sent me in this low quality, you know, flip phone photo, and he sends it to me. And there's a little caption, jealous bitch. And it's like,
I remember this. Yes.
Yeah, you remember that story?
Yeah.
Well, because for people who don't know, some of the visual aesthetics of Hot Rod are based off of me. And so there's that like small connection where Derek was always like poking me like, hey, yep, we're recording the lines now. Oh, hey, like I got the prototype, you know, so good stuff. Good memories back. Derek's a really cool dude. Like it's such a shame that he only really kind of does the West Coast shows now. But like I would love to see him more at cons in the future.
Yeah, I said something to him in the middle of the night one night about Motor Master. Oh, no, I know what it was. Again, this was back when Animator was in production. He was like, I need to see the back of Motor Master's head. And I'm just like fiddling away on my phone at the time or whatever on my computer. I'm like, here you go. He's like, oh, thanks. You know,
according to Teletron 1, Motor Master should be coming down this road right about now.
Well, look who's here! The old king of the road! When I'm finished with you, you'll be king of the junkyard!
Optimus, you're not gonna play chicken with that recall model, are you?
He's got no choice, Spike. Motor Master's gotta be stopped.
I've been waiting for this a long time, Prime!
Ready. So who is your favorite voice actor from Transformers?
Probably David Kaye. And close second would have to be probably Scott McNeil, just because of their raw talent, I'd have to say. It's so funny like how you kind of get desensitized, because David Kaye has probably been the most common voice actor we've ever had at TFCon, to the point that like I don't even think David knows how much I think he's the greatest voice actor of all time, despite the fact that like we've sat and had dinner together, you know, like, and it's, but he doesn't know that, you know what I mean? Like you're sitting across from him. It's like, oh, by the way, this guy's sitting across from you thinks you're like the greatest fucking voice actor of all time. You
know? He'll know now.
Yeah, well, maybe, I guess.
If he listens, I agree with you, by the way.
Like, because like it's something where, and that's where the desensitized come in, is because we have like a section in TFCon staff area where like guests could just come and get a free buffet and sit down and eat and everything. And so many times it's just us with the, like, I just have this one memory. It's called the David table, which was, it was David Kaye, David Wise, rest in peace, one of the original writers for G1 and stuff. It was just David K, David Wise, me, and my buddy Jaws D. And I think Ultra Primal was there too. And we were all just sitting there, and it's just like, hey, is the broccoli good? Ah, it's okay. You know, like, just hanging out. And again, one of those surreal moments where you would have told teenager Daniel, oh, you're going to be casually having dinner with Beast Wars Megatron. You're going to continue doing that over and over every time he's, you know, we're doing cons together and stuff. You know, so him and Scott McNeil just, goddamn, I mean, it's Scotty, you know, like, look at just Beast Wars, just the Beast Wars alone, like just Beast Wars alone with his characters, let alone everything else, you know, let alone, like, Scotty doesn't get enough. If we have to pick a G1 guy, I'm going to go with, and this goes against my fellow Canadian Montrealer, I'm not going to go with Peter. I think Frank Welker is a fucking, like, 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
And that question, no, you don't. It's just simply, who is your favorite Transformers voice actor or actor? I mean, whatever.
David K will be number one, Scotty number two, and if I have to lean into G1, I'll go with Frank Welker, just because, I mean, the way he delivers Megatron lines, like, he does some bangers, man, let me tell you.
The way he switched Megatron for Prime and went with a different, like, I remember him when Prime was coming out, when they were talking about it and whatever else, and how, you know, he's like, oh, X number, you know, 30 years ago or 20 years ago or whatever it is, you know, I was using this part of my voice, but now that Prime is here, I have to switch because the other part hurts my voice.
Yeah, it's called blood on the mic.
Yeah,
term.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
So some of those guys, it's more just for self-sustaining. You know, you can't do that anymore.
Absolutely.
G1 Megatron.
No, I'll crush you with my bare hands.
Transformers Prime Megatron.
And one shall fall. You, Optimus Prime!
G1 Megatron?
I would have waited an eternity for this. It's over, Prime.
Transformers Prime Megatron.
This is merely the beginning! I now possess enough Dark Energon to reanimate Unicron himself! Yes!
So, what is your dream masterpiece figure?
You know what's funny? I've always been... We'll go for the obvious one, then I'll go for something that's a little different. The obvious one is that I've been very hypercritical of the masterpiece Hot Rods and Rodimuses we got, just because they just didn't get it right. And then we got Studio Series 86 Hot Rod, which I think is the greatest toy ever made. And I just go, why wasn't the masterpiece toy this? So yeah. I feel whenever they do decide to revisit that character again, and I think they will, just like they've revisited Prime 3 times. So I think that they're going to probably, because Hot Rod's like one of those upper tier characters that they'll probably be like, oh, we'll do it again in 10 years, you know, some anniversary.
He's the eighth of the core seven.
Yeah, well, the legendary seven. For people that don't know what the, I don't think he's part of that. So for people that aren't aware, the legendary seven is a internal term from Hasbro that's used for licensing and marketing, which refer to the most popular characters regardless of anyone's past knowledge of the brand, meaning that people who know Transformers even in a lesser sense will know who the Tape Guy is or the Bumblebee guy, you know. So the Legendary Seven is Optimus Prime, Starscream, Megatron, Soundwave, Bumblebee, Grimlock, who am I forgetting, Soundwave, and Devastator. So those are the seven that everyone of any walk of life, even non-Transformer fans, remember one of those guys. And when you get into the second tier, then that falls into Jazz, Prowl, Shockwave, RC's kind of moving up on that because they need some girl representation. I dare say Windblade's almost taking that over out of nowhere, but understandably in a lot of ways from a marketing standpoint. And then I feel, and this is coming from me, so if it's coming from me, it's, and I'm being honest, Hot Rod's kind of tier three in their opinion. Maybe not from a trademark standpoint. They'll always protect it now that they got it back. But it's a tier three character for them in a lot of ways. But that being said, I feel that when they do decide to revisit that character, because he's still beloved in Japan, Japan Hot Rod's a big deal, especially Rodimus Convoy, they'll look at that Studio Series 86 figure and go, let's go, boys. Let's make it perfect this time around. Let's get that. It's the Fleur O'Deary design, as I call it. They'll get that perfect. But if there is a dream one, I would like that. I feel like Hasbro and Takara will never do, and thus it would have to be a dream. I'd have to say Road King from Master Force.
Wow.
Because I don't think they'll, because any, like, someone could say, like, oh, G1 Blur, they'll do it.
They'll do it eventually.
There's certain ones that are just a matter of time. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely,
like, And then there's ones that it's like never going to happen in a million years, and that's Road King. You know, that's like Nitro Convoy. There's certain ones that, so that's a dream one. Like, you know.
And like you've already said, especially with what they're doing with Studio Series, whether it's 86 or 96 or whatever, the Studio Series brand and how good they are making those figures.
Oh, yeah.
That Commander Class Rod, if I wasn't just collecting Funko Pops, I would have Rodimus and Galvatron on my desk right now.
When you have a Voyager Class Hot Rod figure that does, that's, well, I don't know what the MSRP is in the States, what, $29.99 for a Voyager? You know, when that does everything and more than 10 years of masterpieces have tried,
that
really says a lot about the modern engineering for some Transformer toys.
Well, and what not only that, but it's masterpiece on a budget price.
Well, even the Core Class, like the Core Class Soundwave, I mean, maybe you guys don't have it, but anyone who owns it knows exactly what I'm talking about.
It's spectacular.
Look what they did, and then you go back, like, let's say 15 years, and you look at, like, Titanium 6-inch Soundwave, and you just go like, what? You know, like it really shows how much they learned throughout the years and developed, and they got some really talented people who are doing some great designs and stuff. The only thing that sucks is just the prices right now and plastic is kind of crazy. Yeah. Where I almost feel like, imagine if we had cheaper plastic prices like they did in 2009 and 10 and stuff like that, but with the engineering they know today, because that's the only weakness that we have today is, some toys have to have less paint filled out, you know, gang molding. Like that, the Studio Series Rodimus, its only complaint I could give is yellow knees, you know, like because they had to gang mold it to save money on the factory floor. So they couldn't make it orange. They had to do it with something. So, but anyways,
This is getting expensive.
So being that we've already talked about that, where do you land on the I have no idea what this
is. All right. I will do it. It's fine. Where do you land on the Rumble is Blue, Frenzy is Red, or Rumble is Red, Frenzy is Blue debate?
I've had this answer for years. You know what it is?
The correct one?
It's going to rock your mind. Rumble is purple, and Frenzy is red.
Well, this I completely agree. Cartoon accuracy, I completely agree with you. I usually say Rumble is purple, Frenzy is black, because
and what I love about the movie continuity was whoever worked, I want to say it's Eric Siebeneller, but they were just trolling because Frenzy from Barricade.
Yep.
Every time they did a repaint of that mold, meaning like you take the deluxe class Barricade and had a Frenzy that came out of the chest.
Yep.
Every time they did a repaint of that mold, it was silver, white, red, blue, black. I think they did a matte gray color. They did every repaint possible just to go Frenzy's everything. You know, so. But I go with purple because when I look at my masterpiece Rumble, it's purple. So that, you know, Decepticons completely are purple.
Completely agree.
So that whole Ferber, whatever the caption is, that's been percolating for years. Rumble is purple, Frenzy is red. That's my answer. There's no blue. What blue? A Diaclone toy? That's light blue.
So if you could create any Transformers fiction toy, cartoon, comic, whatever, what would it be and what story would you want to tell with it?
I can't answer that because it's been sitting in my head and one day it's going to be pitched. So
nice.
I will say this. What War for Cybertron was doing, where it was a more darker, gritty kind of story, is kind of what I wanted to do, but with I don't want to have the limitations of a CG asset budget, because the problem with doing CG is that while it's pretty, it limits you when it comes to characters and storytelling. And by assets, I mean backgrounds. Look, you can love Transformers Prime all you want. It had five backgrounds the entire show. That was its biggest weakness, was like when Jack is driving around in Transformers Prime, if you could zoom out that set, it's like it's three corners of a block. Here's the burger joint, here's the school, and here's where the street race happened. And we're going to use these three scenes in perpetuity forever, where just the year prior with animated, because it's CG, it's not CG, it's cell shaded and it's that kind of stuff, and it's cell work, 2D animation, it's limitless. You could have 1,000 characters, you could have one character, you don't have to have repaint. So what I'm pitching is something that's more traditional animation that Netflix is more in tune to with their anime division with, let's say, Castlevania and the stuff that they do there. And it's something that isn't forced to make 100 Ironhide repaints and Reflector repaints. And, it takes you out of it as a hardcore fan sometimes.
Yep.
So that kind of, I don't want to go too much into it because it's
No, absolutely.
Let's put it this way. It's a conversation. I don't want to, that one day we're going to look back. Let's put it that way.
There you go. And then the thing of it is, I don't necessarily want a Generation 1 continuation. I want War for Cybertron in the cel-shaded Generation 1 style. That's what I want. Like, you take Masters of the Universe Revelation, you say what you want about the story, about the characters, about the Kevin Smith bullshit. Say what you want about that. But the Masters of the Universe animation, the Master of the Universe Revelation animation is what I want for Transformers.
Understanding Revelations, I don't want to go off topic. Understanding Revelations is understanding the Michael Bay movies. And I'm not trying to say that's good or bad. Everyone is allowed to have their own opinion of how they reflect, but it's understanding business. And going to your mention of Generation 1 stuff, Hasbro, how they're always going to tackle it now is keeping trademarks. They got to protect stuff.
True.
So the days of Beast, I did a tweet about this very recently. The days of like Beast Wars coming out of the gate and going, all right, here's our trademarks: Optimus Primal, Rhinox, Cheetor, Dinobot, like all these trademarks that never existed that like just came out of left field. Mind you, it was Kenner at the time, so that also makes a difference. But you would never have that today. If today Beast Wars came out, Cheetor would have been called Prowl. Rattrap would have been called Cliff Jumper. Rhinox would have been called Ironhide. Like they would have, no joke, they would have, and Optimus Primal would have been Optimus Prime. They would have just to keep and protect trademarks instead of making new ones that they have to also protect those and keep in the patent office. And so today, when you write stuff, unfortunately, you're kind of boxed in with, hey, like, we haven't used Overlord in 4 years. We'd really like it if you worked them in there. And that's the same problems that even Bob had to deal with back in the day. You know, where it's like, hey, here's this new toy, write it in. So you just got to be a good writer. You just got to be clever. I got to learn how to do that working with both TFCon and BotCon, because when they make a box set, and those things are literally grab bags of characters, you got to tell a story with those grab bag of characters. And when you do like a TFCon year and it's like, hey, you're going to have this random headmaster, Fortress Maximus, and what was another one? And Ratbat. Tell a story with those three characters. And you just sit down and think of something. And that's where you show your chops. You know what I mean? Where if you could tell a good story or a bad story. And BotCon was good with that too, where you would get some years that, like, if you looked at every character was in that box set, it was like a little bit of everything. You know, so you had to be good at telling that story and having fun with that. So,
yeah, I know I wasn't. I think you said this recently in the last couple of months or whatever. For me personally, 2008 and 2011 are the two best BotCon sets they ever did.
You mean the sets or just like the year overall, like the location and stuff?
No, the toys, the fiction, all of that.
Probably in terms of and not just in terms of wealth and value, and also just because how good they were. Yeah, I would say those 2 years. Yeah, 2008 Shattered Glass, 2011 animated.
Yep.
And if I was able to do my 2017 set, which one day, it's been said publicly on some podcasts, but I kind of hope they get lost in the ether because BotCon is making a comeback. So
Who knows what might happen?
So
hey, as long as you give us the exclusive, I don't care. You don't have to say it now. Yeah. You can say it in 10 years or 5 years or whatever, as long as we get to break the news.
it's something I have to ask Brett.
Well, he's obviously.
He's the new number one, so yep. We'll have to talk to him. But
yep, absolutely. All right, last question, and then we're going to take a quick break and come back to close the show. But last question, what is the one piece of advice that you'd give the Transformers fandom and the Transformers collectors in general?
Be open-minded. Stop being closed-minded. Stop being selfish. Stop being closed-minded. This is a near 40-year brand. Everyone had their G1, meaning like I grew up with 86 movie. You splash a couple years later, some kid grew up with G2. You splash a couple years later, some kid grew up with Beast Wars. You splash a couple years later, some kid grew up with Armada or Prime or Animated or those movies. Stop being selfish. The fandom has that problem sometimes where they think that they're in a vacuum and everything has to be what they want. And if it doesn't happen, best example, the recent news of the latest Titan class we're going to be getting, Metroplex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were vehemently complaining how it's not G1 Metroplex.
Mm-hmm.
And I point out to people, I'm like, look, I understand that it's been, 2013 when it came out? I understand that it's been 8 years since that last one came out. But it had like 5 different releases. It's out there. It exists. Now, granted, it's expensive now in the secondary market, but it's out there and it exists. Now, ask that kid who grew up on Transformers Cybertron how many, remakes of his Metroplex or as it was called, Megalo Convoy in Japan. How many exist of his character? 2. There's the original toy and there's a little PVC figure. That's it. You know what I mean? So he's allowed to get his Titan class when you had 3 different versions of Scramble City 86 Metroplex exist. You have the San Diego Comic-Con one. You have the Japanese one. You have the retail one. You know, like it's out there. It exists. Let someone else get a step at bat. And that's, be open-minded and don't be selfish. That's the biggest problem that the fandom has had for years. It's why I don't really participate on message boards because it's a dumpster fire. Because I read it sometimes and I go, people ask, you know what? And you know this too. People ask me, why don't you follow anyone on Twitter? You have so many followers. Look how many people I follow on Twitter.
Yeah, nobody. No. Yep.
You know why? Because I don't care. I really don't. I don't need to hear other people's opinions because everyone's allowed to have their own opinion because everyone has a different walk of life, background, where they came from, how they were affected, different nostalgia. And in the same way that I can look at Street Sharks or King Arthur and the Knights of Justice or Bots Master or Mummies Alive or these weird 90s toy lines or Biker Mice from Mars or Cowboys of Mu Mesa and go, man, I love these toy lines. But someone who is a little older that saw those in the 90s and go, this is trash, you know? That's cool, man. But I grew up with that stuff and I like it. So it's cool. It's no problem if you don't like it. It's not going to change anything. In the same way that, and I've said this for years, people have a favorite color. And that favorite color will decide what color the most expensive car you get or a pair of shoes you buy. That's how much your favorite color is. But I'll tell you something, your best friend, your mom, your kid, your son, your wife will have a different favorite color. And it doesn't create a war over it, even though how important it is to people. So just be open-minded. It'll do you very good. Trust me, it did me a lot of good. It'll do you very good too.
Absolutely. And that's a story 9 million years in the telling. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, come back to close the show after this.
What was that universal greeting again? Never mind, I remember.
Ba-weep, Grana. Weep, ninny-bong.
Hey, guys, it's Rodimus Primal, and be sure to check out my YouTube channel. Join me as I have Transformers discussions, retrospectives, toy reviews, and more. You can also follow me on Twitter at Rodimus Primal, as well as Facebook and Instagram at Rodimus Primal Show. transform, and roll out, and be sure to check out my content till all are one.
Last big party of the summer, folks. Let's go out with a bang.
Discover a world of vintage and modern toys that's more than meets the eye with the Triple Takeover Toycast.
Hosted by toy writers and photographers Toybox Soapbox, 6-0, and TF Square One, this informal and chilled out series of discussions cover everything from vintage Transformers to Mask, Diaclone, Microman and more, be it nostalgic or current.
Whether you're a seasoned collector or a casual robot enthusiast, all are welcome.
Triple Takeover Toycast.
All right, folks, we are back here in All Things Transformers talking Proto-Man's origin story within the Transformers franchise. And as Proto-Man has mentioned over the last almost 13 years that he's been on the Geekcast Radio Network, he is one of the organizers, or he was. You still are. I mean, it's not like you're not.
The world we're in right now, are we anything? You know,
that's true, but... He is one of the organizers of TFCon, which is Canada's largest Transformers convention. And regardless of COVID, apparently, from October 22nd to October 24th, 2021, TFCon Baltimore is happening at the Hilton Baltimore.
That's the USA show. Yeah.
Yep, that's the USA show for 2021. The Canadian show for 2021 is on the dark side of Cybertron. Friday, December 10th to December 12th, TFCon Toronto at the Hilton Mississauga. I can't read the rest of that. But anyway, yes, TFCon Baltimore, TFCon Toronto. And then this also says March 11th, 2022 to March, I don't know, TFCon Los Angeles.
LA. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now, let me tell you something. I don't want to step over the other two, but TFCon LA, when they did it last time, man, I've been to a lot of BotCons back in my day, mm-hmm. but that was BotCon level crazy. And I will say this, I've never seen that many voice actors in one place in my life. And I've been to, again, 17 BotCons. I've never seen that many, that LA show. So if that LA show is going to be any indication, the last one, don't miss out. That's going to be a G1 reunion extravaganza. Yep. Assuming. I don't want to make any promises, but chances are, because we're in their backyard, most of these people, it's going to probably happen. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So really quickly, let's talk about what you know about Baltimore, because Colin is doing that one here in the States. You are not doing that one. You're not even attending, because it's so difficult in these times. But anyway, what information do you know about Baltimore that we can pass on to our listeners?
Well, I know that in terms of the voice actors that are going to be there, I know Gary Chalk is going to be going over.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Very cool.
That's pretty much it. Okay. All righty then.
Waiting for the motorcycle to pass. That's why.
That's just RC. She's downstairs. It's okay.
We have Xavier Paul that's going to be there from Transformers Cyberverse. I believe that's his first ever Transformer convention. So that's a unique one, at least in terms of, because Venus is going to be there. Gary's going to be there. I don't want to say it's old hat. It's always new for somebody. But these are, Greg Berger, who's Grimlock. Those guys have been to multiple Transformer conventions.
Yep.
But Xavier being there, so that's kind of a unique one. For people who don't know, he was Dead End in Cyberverse. So that's kind of cool. Bob being there is pretty cool, too, because he hasn't done a lot of shows. So he's pretty another unique one to get in terms of guests to be excited about. So those are some of them that I would want to point out more than the others, because to me, I really like the shows where you get a guest that they've only done one, like for the longest time, Frank was that, getting that one Frank Welker show,
I remember that one.
Yeah. So, but that's why. So those are the guys that if sometimes they won't what's his name? Bumper Robinson, who did Bumblebee from Animated. He did one show and then never did it again. So anyone who went to that BotCon was a very lucky person in 2008. Yeah. You want to go to those shows. You want to go to those that have unique people, I find. Good opportunities. I always say opportunity over anything else.
Absolutely. And then in the darkness of the Dweller in the Depths in December of 2021, we have TFCon Toronto.
Yeah, that one still there's not really much to talk about because how the con works is we don't really like hammer the other one until the other one's done yet.
So right.
If you're someone who's looking forward to Toronto's show, let's put it this way. Once Baltimore, like literally the day after Baltimore's done, go check the website. Then stuff will start dropping. It's more from an organizer standpoint. It just makes sense to kind of just, we're focusing on one. And when that one's in the rearview mirror.
Absolutely.
The next one. But again, December 10th to the 12th, you know, the Hilton, Mississauga, Middledale. Beautiful hotel. Love it there. Cool place. Good food, too. You know, usually hotel food's pretty garbo. But they have pretty good food and they have good deals and stuff like that. In terms of like guests and stuff, again, it's still pretty early. Like it's something that, again, after Baltimore in October, go check out the TeeOffCon.ca for the Canadian one as opposed to .com. There'll be more updates and then we'll learn, because right now if you go to the website, it's still all the voice actors from
2019
before the world went into craziness. Yep. So.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I was like, oh, wow, he already has all the things set up. And then I looked at it again, and I'm like, oh, that was the guest list from 2019.
It's just because of the weirdness of how the world has been.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Everything's kind of crushed together right now. We're just trying to, you know, it is what it is. You know?
So, yeah.
Like I said, after Baltimore, if you're looking forward to Toronto, check out the website frequently. After Baltimore ends, there'll be updates for sure. I almost guarantee, like, literally the next day. Like maybe not the Monday, but like the Tuesday when everyone's like settled in for sure.
Very cool. Oh, wow. Baltimore's got a lot of artists. Holy crap. Andrew Griffith, Casey Collar, Livio Remondelli, and Josh Burcham. Wow, that's going to be cool.
Probably more, too.
Probably. I mean, this is just as of this recording, which is October 11th, 2021.
A lot of times the artist alley has a lot of dudes that usually their announcements don't happen until like 2 weeks before the show or a week before the show, or sometimes days before the show, even just to keep the interest, you know, as it's leading up to it, because you also have walk-ins. They'll be like, oh, you know, maybe so-and-so is going to be there. That's pretty cool.
Yep. Absolutely. Anything you want to say before I run through the outro, Steve?
It's been great having this breakdown and behind-the-scenes look into the life of Proto Man.
As interesting as that could possibly be. But yeah, thank you.
Okay, so what would happen in a world where Rodimus has to fight Proto Man?
As in from the Mega Man?
Uh-huh.
No, Proto Man wouldn't stand. Are you kidding me? It's apples. You know what? People always ask me, like, what would you think of, like, a Transformers Mega Man crossover?
Mm-hmm.
But for people that don't know, Proto Man's a character from the Mega Man series. I think that, like, Dr. Light would have to rebuild everyone to be bigger. You know, like, it wouldn't be fair. You know what I mean? It's funny, in the Mega Man universe, there is, like, Transformer-like kind of characters. Like, there's a character called Turbo Man that actually is a transforming, like, car, like, race, like a hot rod kind of car, as in a hot rod, like a speed hot rod car.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of exists in Mega Man lore that there is Transformers, but they're very tiny. They're human sized. So
very cool.
It'd be cool to see, though, but it's all in the writing. It's how you would write it.
Yep. All right. Thank you for joining us here on All Things Transformers. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website where you can listen to and comment on all of our content, geekcastradio.com. Send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Spotify and any other podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on Twitter @GeekCastRadio is for the network, @AllThingsTFV3 is for the show. I am @TFG1Mike. Steve, don't forget, you have two Twitters now.
@SCP21 and @SteveFillipsVO.
What is your Twitter, Proto Man, in case people want to follow you?
@ProtoMan. You can check that one out. I post usually just podcast segments and once in a while cool toys that I have in my collection. I like to do little photo shoots and everything on my Insta. Which I linked through my Twitter.
Very cool. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. I believe Transformers Slag is over there on Facebook too, isn't it?
Yes, Transformer Slag Podcast, number one Transformer podcast in the world. I'm just going to say it. Thank you, Social Blade, for letting me know that. I didn't know that for a while until someone pointed it out to me. it's on YouTube is probably the best way to listen to it. Also, we have it on Facebook. We have it on Patreon. We have it on Twitter. I post all the separate segments usually in general if you want to keep up to date. I always say follow me on Twitter. Or even I have a website, theprotoman.com, which kind of shows all the stuff I work on usually. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. I usually post everything I'm doing. Whenever this goes live, I'll post that on there too. You know, so
awesome.
That's probably the best way to do it.
Very cool. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Steve Megatron
and Protoman.
We hope you transform and transcend with us. In the next time that we talk to you here on All Things Transformers.
It's a pity you Autobots die so easily, or I might have a sense of satisfaction now.
You got the touch! You got the...
Arise, Rodimus Prime. Optimus.
Yeah!
No.
I wish to speak to my lawyer.